make just a few remarks to address some of the issues that have come to my attention through correspondence. All right. So immediately after apologies, I would just like to address the issue of fire in that regard. It relates to entities that were coming to us tomorrow. Can we have somebody to propose the adoption of the agenda with that amendment? Thank you, Honourable Williams, seconded by the Honourable Kecharia. The apologies.
The Chair, to date I only received an apology from Ms. Fonwini, who is attending to party business. Mr. Estes most likely would be attending another committee if he's not attending this committee. And you indicated that Mr. Khadebe is in a strategy meeting and will join the committee later.
That's right. Now, as you know, tomorrow we were going to be engaging with, among many others, SARS. And I received a letter, a written communication on this, asking if they could come at a later time. At the moment, the Auditor General has not yet signed off on the financial statements. You will recall that there's been this changeover. They are now being managed directly by DTI, and clearly that has delayed some of these processes. So just so members know, tomorrow they were coming, they would have been here before midday, and instead there's a consideration of the study visit report, the German leg, the fourth industrial revolution will come in at that point. Is there anything else that we would have to engage on? Mr. Hermans?
No, Chair, if we can consider the report tomorrow, that it has been distributed to members previously, but it was distributed today again, so that members can consider it tomorrow.
We'll be reviewing the BRRR process on the programme, just to ensure that we are still on track, but that will be done by Manco later this week, and then we will brief you. Right. We've looked at the apologies here, and we will move straight in then to the briefing on the National Gambling Amendment Bill. I wish to recognise the DDG of Trade and Industry, Dr. Masocha, Mr. Masha Maite, Deputy Director, Gambling Law and Policy, Ms. Shale, Assistant Director, Gambling Law and Policy. Do we have for the Gambling Board Ms. Caroline Kongwa, Hankunga? Oh yes, right here. Yes, sorry. The current administrator there running it. And Ms. Estelle Jonkheit, Senior Manager Research and Information. Right, on that note then, we're going to hand over to you, DDG, all right?
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honourable members. Good morning, Chairperson. Morning, colleagues and other members of the public and other stakeholders. We are here to give a briefing on the Gambling Amendment Bill, and I'm with the National Gambling Board, the administrator, and just a correction, Chair, sorry, from our side, Mr. Ngwatse Mashamaite is the director, and Ms. Tulufelo is, Shirley is the deputy director. Apologies for that information.
Thank you.
Yes. The purpose of this this brief is to just give a briefing to the committee on the bill and to outline what it contains. And I will request that I will give a brief background, and then the National Gambling Board will also present on the outlook of the gambling industry to give the committee a sense of how the gambling industry is and the landscape of how it operates. So the presentation will cover the outlook of the industry and then outlining the key challenges that are existing at the moment, and then proposing the clauses and the provisions that the bill will contain. In terms of the historical context of where the gambling landscape policy and legislation comes from, the first one was the Wehan Commission that recommended that there must be a strict regulation on gambling in 1995. And then in 1996, we have the Gambling Act that was introduced, that was passed, and it also established the National Gambling Board. And in 2004, it was amended, the 1996 legislation was amended, and it introduced the National Gambling Policy Council, which is an establishment or a council that is of concurrency between provinces and the national gambling national gambling policy and legislation, and also it aligns with the provinces. And in 2008, the National Gambling Amendment Act on Interactive Gambling was passed into law. It was promulgated. But this legislation has not been is not effective currently. It's not effective because the committee at the time reconsidered it, and the department was required to conduct a review on the gambling legislation, and that's how the Gambling Review Commission came into being in which was in 2010, which made some recommendations for policy reform. And those policy reforms, some of them led to the current legislative amendments that we have. And now we have the Gambling Amendment Bill of 2018, which was introduced into Parliament. And the bill process itself commenced in 2015 when it was published, when the policy was published for wider public consultation. And the written submissions that were received from the stakeholders led to the consultative workshops that were conducted until September of the same year. And then the policy council then approved, the policy was approved by cabinet, in 2016. And then the bill was drafted after that. And then the bill was published for wider consultation in September of 2016. And this year it was approved by the state law advisors. It was in cabinet and it was introduced into Parliament. So this is how far the processes have gone. So the processes started some time ago around the bill. And that is just the overview of the background, Chair. And I will request the administrator, Ms. Gongwa, to come and give the gambling outlook of in South Africa.
Good morning, Chairperson, honourable members, and colleagues and stakeholders. As you may be aware, the National Gambling Board's part of its mandate is basically to monitor sector performance, research, and basically continuously conduct compliance. So this is an overview of how the industry is doing. Turnover, we've just been able to give you two financial years. So the latest figures would be on your far right in terms of turnover, which is basically monies that punters put into the machines and then what they continuously at times put into. So that's basically turnover, and that's standing at 389 million, the financial year ending March 2018. And then gross gambling revenue in terms of industry performance, is basically standing at approximately 28 million. Then the tax that is collected by provinces is standing at 2.8 billion. Sorry, I said million instead of billion, sorry. this is an overview of basically what the share is of gross gambling revenue. That is the 28 billion from a mode perspective. So the casino industry over the years still maintains the greater share of gross gambling revenue, followed by the betting industry, and then the LPM industry, and then the bingo industry. Then this is basically the same information, gross gambling revenue, but from a provincial perspective, and Gauteng still maintains the highest share, followed by Western Cape and KwaZulu-Natal. And then this is basically a dashboard of the industry performance, as it is out of the 41 licenses in terms of the casino industry. We have 38 casino licenses that are fully operational, and what follows then are the various seatings in the casino industry. After that, you'll notice the totalizator outlets in financial year ending March 18, we've experienced a decline. It's the only actually sector in the industry that has experienced a decline in terms of positions, and then followed by the bookmakers at 284. LPMs have increased, and then bingo positions also have increased. And in terms of the bingo positions, it's basically electronic bingo terminals and traditional bingo included in that figure of 8,520. And then this slide basically goes more into detail on market share, and it's basically showing you out of 100%, you know, how the various modes have performed from the financial year 2018. So, for example, the casinos, we've seen a decline as a result of growth in other sectors, but we are not saying that it's necessarily due to other sectors. There would be other economic reasons why, but we are just showing that as we monitor and which modes then increase in terms of share out of 100%, that basically gives you an indication. So, the mode basically that has shown the greatest growth and increment would be the betting industry, especially in the previous two financial years. And then we've also prepared this slide just to give you an indication in terms of the maximum licenses as at the 31st of March 2018. And this is basically information from provinces in terms of their output in terms of what it is that's licensed and what the basis is of the collection of tax and sources of gross gambling revenue. So there you'll just see the trends. In the first row, it's the casino industry, what has been rolled out basically per province, and then the number of route operators, which will be the limited payout industry, and then followed by bookmakers, totalizators, and the number of bingo licenses per province that have been rolled out. And then on this slide, we are showing particularly because it's aligned to the discussions for the day regarding the National Gambling Amendment Bill. Specifically, we then, you know, projected basically how the bingo industry has been doing after the introduction of the electronic bingo terminal. So basically what we're showing you is over three financial years how within the bingo industry, traditional bingo has decreased and how electronic bingo terminals have increased just from a gross gambling revenue perspective and performance. And then it also gives an indication in terms of
the number of provinces that have basically rolled out electronic bingo terminals. And then this is a trend in GGR, on the horse racing and sport, that's betting or wagering industry. So yet again here, we're just giving an indication in terms of how the spikes, in terms of increment when you look at horse racing and betting over the financial years to date, in terms of bookmakers versus the totalizators who haven't shown much growth and in certain respects decline in terms of betting on horse racing and sports betting. So the first two graphs would be bookmakers, and then the third and fourth would be horse racing, sorry, totalizators. And then this is also the trend in bookmakers and totalizators in terms of tax. So I think what would be of particular interest, if we go back to the previous slide, you will see, for example, bookmakers on horse racing would basically realize less gross gambling revenue, but when you look at the tax, they are heavily taxed. And then, you know, in the sports betting industry, they are faring okay. The others, totalizators, I think there's alignment in terms of then gross gambling revenue and the tax that they pay. So that's just a trend we wanted to bring to your attention. And then in terms of direct employment, which we're also asked to address, in terms of our latest figures financial year, and this is just on direct employment, we're standing at 27,910 jobs. And then in terms of average B contributor levels, I think three financial years back we're averaging at about level two, and then there was implementation of the new B, the latest B codes. So then the contribution levels basically staggered. And in certain industries, it dropped, but it was just due to compliance with the triple B, latest triple B codes, and all licensees basically are working towards increasing their B status levels. And then this is just giving us an indication based on latest research that we had to conduct. That is the socioeconomic impact research. Ordinarily, as you would know, it's based on sampling, so it's not necessarily representative of all people who gamble in South Africa, but just on sampling that we did as far as we could. So these are just the trends in terms of prevalence and preference. In terms of the second one that we've pointed out, unlicensed modes, it's basically based on punters, and it's set out in more detail in the report in terms of what punters basically at times would explore and not necessarily are aware that what it is they are further exploring in terms of gambling modes than actually illegal gambling modes. So that's part of the findings. And then it is an area of concern because within that there's also illegal online gambling. And then this is basically also an indication of participation in illegal online gambling. Yet again, it's based on research that was conducted in 2016. And definitely with embracement of technology, moving into the fourth industrial revolution, online activities have definitely become very popular. And then globally, this is based also on a source, Casino City 2016. We're just looking at, you know, what is out there and how many online sites one is and in terms of the jurisdictions across the world. And then also the popular games that basically are played, and this does spill over into South Africa in terms of individuals then who participate. And then we just gave a summary of the countries that actually have outright prohibited online gambling, but further details are in the detailed report. Economic impact, basically we were able to estimate monetary flows from illegal online gambling in South Africa and the impact to the economy. And based on the research, there was a total loss in value of about $1.9 billion to the economy per annum. This includes direct impact of $972 million and indirect impact. This is about less than 0.01% of the total annual GDP for South Africa. And then the research also revealed basically total loss of about 3,785 employment opportunities in the legal gambling industry based on employment figures in the casino and related services, which equates to about 5.9% of total employed persons in the casino industry in the country. But yet again, we can give further context and further details are in the main report. We're also asked to address the issue of unlawful winnings. And basically, we've been able to forfeit so far an amount of approximately 1.3 million, to the state in terms of unlawful winnings. This is within the National Gambling Board's mandate and monies that are confiscated by the banks in terms of implementation of Section 16. So there are various reasons why then monies would be deemed unlawful winnings, which would be underage gambling, a person who's excluded, and basically someone obtaining winnings from an illegal gambling activity. So that's just an indication where we are. And then I'll hand over to DDG to basically conclude the rest of the presentation. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So in this slide, we will just outline some of the key challenges that are impacting on the policy and legislation and the gambling industry generally. One of the key issues is around the National Gambling Board itself, the agency to reposition it to be a regulator. Currently, we have the Gambling Board that does not have a board. Given different challenges that were experienced with the then board, it was removed, and we put together an administration process through an administrator to address the challenges and to administer the work of the Gambling Board. And this situation has been awaiting the changes in the legislation. And because of that, we think that this is one of the most urgent issues that needs to be addressed in order to reposition it to be a regulator and also to deal with the issue around the administrator and making the institution more operational from a clear governance perspective. And with the existing legislation, there are loopholes that have been identified, and unfortunately, some of them have led to different issues of exploitation of the gambling activities. For instance, the issue of the betting on the national lotteries. As you know, that the national lottery is an exclusive competency of the national government. Another issue that is not provided for in the national legislation is around the electronic bingo terminals, which are another form of gambling. But then, because of the loopholes, it's currently being offered in the country, and the numbers are growing massively, and there's a concern around the proliferation of this gambling activity. I think the administrator, when she was presenting, she highlighted some of the numbers that are involved in the electronic bingo terminals, and even the issue around the transformation that you highlighted too, in terms of the slow pace of transformation in the industry itself. And another issue we wanted to address around the regulations of the horse racing industry. The horse racing industry has never been in a regulated legislative framework. It's a self-regulated industry. However, there are challenges that have been that has come up regarding how it is functioning. For example, some of them are labor-related issues, but they are part of the industry itself. There has been concerns and complaints around the transformation issues and the way the market is structured. And generally, there are no norms and standards that guide how the industry operates. This issue might be contentious as well, but we think that there's a need for a legislative framework to address some of those imbalances that are in the industry itself. Another key issue is around the coordination between the national government and the provincial legislation. And there has been issues of alignment, and because of the misalignments, there are also many issues around the legal challenges, and that brings litigations. And then there will be issues that come up around the interpretation of the legislation and where the national and the provinces are not aligned in different ways around this. And also the coordination issues talk to the National Gambling Policy Council itself, because the structure that is meant to assist with the concurrency and the coordination, there have been challenges around that as well in terms of it being able to be effective in assisting to create proper alignment and coordination. Illegal gambling in South Africa remains a challenge, and because of this, the enforcement powers of the national the national regulator or the National Gambling Board needs to be revamped in terms of dealing with issues that come up on illegal gambling, and that's one of the things that this bill tries to address. And as you saw the slide about unlawful winnings, the processes of dealing with the unlawful winnings is onerous, and it creates a burden because it also involves going to the high court, and sometimes the amounts that are dealt with are very minor, but then the process, you find that the process is bigger than the actual amounts that are being recouped in the process. So that is one of the issues that is key that is being addressed. And I think overall, there are many vested interests in the area of gambling, and because of that, it's a very important industry in terms of job creation and economic growth, and it has many challenges, but I thought that it's important to just put that context and also the picture of what the industry is about before we go into the specific amendments that we are proposing. I will leave the definition section because it's mainly the definition of the electronic bingo terminals, because we want to provide for them in the legislation. Before, it was the traditional forms of bingo that were functioning. And on slide 24, here we are talking about the amendment that deals with the illegal lotteries, the lotteries that are currently issued by other regulators that are not in line with the National Lotteries legislation. And we want to amend this to restrict the lottery-related licenses and to make them to be under the gambling legislation. And we are introducing the sections that will ensure that Section 44C is introduced to provide that bet on lottery results or conducting of sports pools must be licensed under the lottery that are under the lottery legislation must be under the lottery legislation by the board of the National Lotteries Commission, and that they must contribute to the NLDTF as well. So we want to ensure that they align to the current legislation, and that we ensure that the regulatory framework is provided for that gap that we've identified in the legislation. And
in terms of the comments that we got on this, is that provinces are concerned that this will cause them to lose their revenue. We are aware that there are those concerns about the revenue, and that and also the operators are divided and concerned about the rate that the minister will impose in terms of the contribution. And but as in our view, we are saying that we would like to retain this provision in the legislation, and we have undertaken to engage the industry when it comes to the rate of contribution to the National Lotteries Distribution, the trust fund. And also, in terms of the listing of the excluded persons, we are also proposing for a section 1413 to be inserted to provide that operators must remove the names of excluded persons from their mailing list. Excluded persons are persons who are affected by gambling challenges. These are people who have problems of problem gambling, and to avoid a challenge of them being overstimulated by gambling activities, we want them to be excluded persons from the mailing list of the operators. So this is for the protection of the punters with problem gambling. And we are proposing that Section 15 be amended for the minister to regulate the times of gambling advertising, and to prevent unsolicited gambling messages through SMSs or internet. As you are aware that when it comes to gambling advertising, you will find that when you are browsing on the internet or on your SMSs, sometimes there will be those messages that come through that are unsolicited. And some have supported this, but then also industry role players have challenges around that. And so it's one of the areas that might be opposed, but we think that the provision will ensure that the overstimulation of gambling is provided for, and that we protect our people from overstimulation of gambling. And this next one on the slide 26 talks to the unlawful winnings. They used to be forfeited to the state, and now we are proposing that they be forfeited to the regulator, the proposed regulator, and that the process should be automatically done without the process of the courts, and that there were concerns from the comments that this may lead to arbitrary exercise of power by the National Gambling Board. But we are saying that the board must ensure that the Promotion of Administrative Justice Act is complied with before the money is declared forfeited. But the positive thing is that there will not be any need for a court order as it was the process before. So this lessens the onerous burden of this process. And the next one is around the gambling premises, how the gambling premises should be. So Section 17 is proposed to be amended to ensure that the premises that are in the shopping centres and complexes must have separate entrances from other shops in the malls. So, for example, if you go into a mall, the entrance of the casino next to the mall must have a separate entrance, and also that those who are leasing, they must not participate in unlicensed gambling operations. So we are prohibiting the leasing for the unlicensed gambling operators or activities. So on this one, the concern is around the existing premises that are already currently in place, that are currently operating, that this will lead to serious challenges for them, and that it's an unfair process for the businesses that are already in place. And also we also added an additional amendment to require that premises in multi-story buildings be located on separate floors from the rest of the shops. And the main emphasis of these amendments is to ensure that we don't also encourage a culture of gambling and the overstimulation in terms of gambling participation. And the next slide talks to the National Central Electronic Monitoring System. It's to ensure that there's an amendment that the third party is appointed to operate the system, and that it is done through a national license. The National Electronic System, it addresses the monitoring of limited payout machines operators and the limited payout machines. And the concern here from the operators is that they recommended that the NSEMs be left to them, as it is the case in other gambling modes, and some provinces believe they must operate the NSEMs and that it must be extended to all gambling modes, as they often struggle to get the required information from the operators. And in line with the approved policy, the bill currently provides that the National Gambling Board must develop capacity to extend the NSEMs to all other gambling operations. And here on Section 33, we are proposing an amendment to emphasize that the National Gambling Regulator's role to ensure that the socioeconomic effects of gambling are considered before the provincial licensing authorities approve in excess of five limited payout machine sites. So here we are providing powers for the NGR to have oversight over a particular limit of the LPMs per site. And there are concerns from provinces that this encroaches on their independence to license gambling, and that the NGR without a board will also mean the decisions adopted by the provincial licensing authorities can be overturned by the CEO, thus undermining the collective expertise of their boards. And we are saying that Section 65C, the new insertion, proposes that the bill has an ad hoc committee by the NGR that will consist of internal and external people to deal with concerns about the powers of the CEO. So the regulator will be working with that committee to address that concern they have regarding its powers. And the next section talks to amendments on slide 30, talks to the horse racing industry. So here it's a section 44B1 and 2 is amended to recognize the self-regulation in the industry, and that the monitoring by the NGB through the standard operating procedures to be approved by the Policy Council. So this is just to give effect to regulating for the horse racing industry. So there are some few concerns there as well, but we are proposing that this be retained, and we have this in the legislation so that the horse racing industry can be monitored, and some of the challenges that have been identified with it can be properly legislated with the norms and standards and through the criteria that will be developed with the concurrency of the provinces and national. And in terms of the next slide, Section 44C is amended to provide for the licensing authorities to determine a payable rate by the bookmakers towards the development of the horse racing industry as they take bets on horse racing products. And the rate to be determined must consider current contributions by the bookmakers. This is one of the areas that is opposed by the bookmakers and the toad operators, because they believe that the current contribution of 6% to the licensing authorities with half going to the toll operators is enough. So what they are currently contributing, according to them, is enough. And they want the bill to stay out of this process. And just to highlight that currently the bookmaker contribution of 6% is a subject of the public protector inquiry into the horse racing. So there's an inquiry currently in place regarding the horse racing industry. And the next slide is around the Policy Council. As I've mentioned, the importance of this council as a forum where provinces and national take decisions of concurrency. We want to propose that when the national, when the provinces make amendments to their legislation, that they consult with the Policy Council. So this will ensure that there is coordination and also there is alignment. Because sometimes there are changes that occur in legislations in provinces that often you'll find that there are contradictions or there's no proper coordination. So we think that in the interest of cooperative governance, this is a necessary proposal. And the other one that is very, very important is around the Gambling Policy Council meetings. That the Policy Council meetings, they are very important in terms of the concurrency and the jurisdiction of the national and the provincial government. The challenge with the Policy Council meetings is that they have not been correcting for a number of months. So the legislation provides for the number of times that the meeting can take place, and this is where important decisions should be taking place. But what happens is that in different meetings, you find that there's no quorum, and sometimes it can happen that there's no quorum for very long extended periods of time. So we are proposing that if in the first meeting there is no quorum, in the next meeting a decision is taken based on the majority of the members that are available in that meeting. So this is just to try to address that key decisions do not remain untaken because of this this challenge. And I would say this is one of the most important amendments in the bill because it talks to the governance issue of the National Gambling Board. And we are proposing that it be repositioned into a regulator. Because of the nature of the work it will be doing, and in part of it, the part of the work it's doing now of regulating, it will be looking after issues around the illegal gambling activities and enforcement. We propose that it be a regulator, and not only that, that as a regulator, that it the board structure is no longer necessary for it, and this is in line with the approach that the department has taken on other regulators. We have regulators who are more on enforcement and other issues, but not having boards. So it won't be unique to the National Gambling Board, this model, where there's a CEO that addresses issues in the legislation without the board. So we recommend that this proposal be considered in the bill, and that to support the National Gambling Regulator, there will be this ad hoc committee that will also help in terms of the decision-making processes that will consist of internal and external people to assist the CEO in key decisions around the work of the gambling regulator. And in the next slide, it's more about the enforcement powers of the regulator. So Section 76A is inserted to provide for the regulator to develop the inspectorate capacity to enforce against illegal gambling operations in the country. And part of this includes the measures to notify banks and internet service providers to cease doing business within an illegal with an illegal operator. So this is just to strengthen the enforcement around illegal gambling activities. And also that Section 76 is also amended to insert a provision that the regulator keeps a register of illegal gambling operators. And this is supported, but I must highlight that there are views that the department must reconsider the stance on online gambling. the argument is that we are operating in the global economic space. Online gambling is taking place. People are gambling. Access to the internet is highly accessible on the phones, on the different modes of communication. And the policy position taken from our side has been that we do not allow online gambling. However, there is a view out there that it should be allowed in the country. But that is highlighted just to give a balanced view in terms of where the status is. But because of the concerns of the department on the extent of problem gambling and people being exposed to gambling and allowing it, we think that it might be have a detrimental effect for people, especially in the context of the socioeconomic challenges that we have in South Africa. So basically, those are the main proposals of this bill, Chair, and we just wanted to bring this to the portfolio committee and to say this is what the department has been proposing around the bill. It was certified by the state law advisors prior to the approval by cabinet. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dr. Masocha. Members, you've had that overview briefing on the National Credit, the National Gambling Bill. We're dealing so much with credit these days that overlooked it. And I think the opportunity is now given to members of the committee to engage with us either through comment or through, of course, straight questions to enable all members of the committee to participate. Can we look at either two questions or a maximum of 3 minutes, please? Thank you. Yes, thank you, Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. Thanks for the presentation. I just have a question on slide 16. I want to know if these employment figures have been verified, and if so, how have they been verified? Thank you.
Yes, right. 10 seconds. Honourable Matlobo, followed by the Honourable Kachalia, and the Honourable MacPherson.
No, thanks, Comrade Chair, and thanks to the team. Probably I will steal Comrade Williams' notes. But just to say thanks for the presentation from the team, safe to say that there is a slide that refers to key challenges that has been presented. It's always suggested that you don't only give us key challenges, but what you do, you also say what are the mitigation measures, what is your plan over what period. Comrade Chair, it's slide 22, because to say there are problems and then without saying what we need to do, it's going to be a challenge. Well, one of the things that we must also notice to say that we need to create stability at the top. If we say that the board is not there, there's an administrator, we'll want the executive to stabilize the institution. It's very important that the institution is stabilized. We'll support the view that it becomes a regulator because of the other mechanism that exists, some functions that are done by provinces. But we must agree that we don't want to actually regulate everything. What do you want to regulate? Very important, because some of these things that the provinces are doing, like they are saying, is an important issue they are raising. On slide, these numbers, what is this one? Hey, Comrade Chair, it should be 24, no? Yeah. Comrade Chair, very quickly, I'm happy that we'll probably have to share with us in writing what were these concerns, especially one of the things that you wanted to come closer to now. There is a clear distinction how the Lotteries Commission works. Now, to try to come closer, we need to be able to see what is their view, because the Lottery Commission has been one of the institutions that has been working well, and South Africa has become a model for the continent. And the concern from the province and the industry. The last one, Comrade Chair, this thing of trying to, is page 25, ne? This thing of trying to control people's lives is not going to help around the question of borderless communication, the advent of technology, Comrade Chair, is not going to work. There is nothing wrong to gamble online, but the state must be more concerned to see what are the risks that are associated, whether you give them a permission or not. People are not going to stop gambling. The reality is to say, what are the other things we can do? For an example, that the platforms where they are gambling is the right platforms, they are safe, they are not hoodwinked. But more importantly, the ability to bring in civic education. But to just to try to go in an opposite direction when there is an advent of technology is not going to work. I thought I should be able to raise those issues. And I can see that the amendment is more limited to more technical matters. And we'll have to probably reflect as a committee whether is it a phased approach, Comrade Chair, whether is it a total sum to look at those. But just be careful that when you are trying to do an amendment, don't impose things which really are not necessary, like the buildings. Why would you want to do issues of building? Because actually anything about buildings is more about special planning. And the issues of access are issues of access. But the issue is to say, what are the norms and standards you want to do, rather than to start to prescribe now certain issues. But generally, it's a welcome intervention, Comrade Chair. It's okay that it's here. And then let's put our heads together to say how far do we want to do. If it's a phased approach, what will be the impact? I might have been long, but I will not come back on this one. I thought, Comrade Chair, thank you very much for your indulgence.
You remained within your time. Honourable Kachalia.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I just want to address the issue of online gambling and to echo the Honourable Mashlobo's statements that it's a reality, and it's I know of no jurisdiction anywhere in the world, for whatever the Chinese or the Lithuanians or the Hungarians may do, is not going to have an impact on this. The UK legislation, in my experience, is telling here as one of the few successful countries that have legislated and brought and legalized and licensed what they called interactive gambling. And I think I wonder if you'd looked at that particular example, because that's a shining example of how to do it. Because prohibition, as we all know, is full of pitfalls and will just drive people into illegal gambling. So I think that must be looked at extraordinarily careful without any... I think we don't need a kind of... The object here is clearly to license and to benefit the fiscus. And the more licenses that are granted, the more licenses that are both on a regulated and a self-regulated in a self-regulated way are to be looked at, and examples of where self-regulation has worked needs to be looked at. I wonder whether you've looked at where it's worked and where it hasn't, rather than a blanket approach to say let's regulate fully. I mean, I think certain industries have certain parts of the industry have worked well under self-regulation internationally. Let's learn from that, and let's see what we can do. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Honourable MacPherson.
Thank you. Let me just say from the outset that this is a very bad bill that has been tabled by the department and seeks to cure someone with gangrene by giving them Panado. It's just not going to work. So what we actually need to do is look at what are the real problems with gambling in South Africa, and how can we actually put some good solutions on the table. Now, we know for a long time that you have a two states in a state when it comes to gambling. You have provinces that do their own thing and quite literally give the national government the middle finger when it comes to regulations around gambling. And I think that your slide on page 13, DDG, is a great example of how when Minister Rob Davies issued a moratorium on bingo licenses 2 years ago, the provinces said, we'll do as we want, and the proof is in there. But what I want to understand the department's view around online gaming. Now, you've gone and said that revenue with respect to gaming is 1.9 billion rand, and yet you were only able to issue a fine in 2016. That's quite old. I'd be interested if any other fines were issued since then, to date, of only 1 million rand. Now, that's 1.9 billion rand that you know of. I would hesitate to guess that it is a lot more than that that takes place. And yet the department's view, as articulated by the then former acting DDG, Mr. MacDonald Netshetenze, was, well, we'll just ban the internet when it comes to online gambling. Those were his words. Now, clearly that is not possible. So I think now is a great opportunity for the department DDG to review its stance on online gaming. And the chairperson will recall that, in fact, it was this committee, well, not the whole committee, but the ANC members of this committee, that rejected a committee bill that would actually deal with online gaming. It was called the Remote Gambling Bill. It was tabled by the Honourable Hill Lewis. So I think now is a great time, DDG, to review the department's stance on gaming. But I also want to ask DDG with respect to the process of this bill. Now, this bill was first published in the Government Gazette of 2016, and it was General Notice 1207. Parties were asked to comment on that bill, and the bill, as it sits today, is substantially different from the bill that was first gazetted in 2016. Is the bill going to be gazetted again for the second time for public comment? Because there are material impacts on the gaming and gambling industry that have not been given to the public to comment. So if you can just take me through the process of whether you're going to be gazetting the bill again, and if not, why not? What I would also strongly suggest to you on the record, DDG, is to go and have a look at the bill again, see where the real problems are. I'm happy to give you some thoughts on that. And I think it's time that we actually, as a committee, look to the example that we set with respect to copyright, whether it's not time for this committee to actually shove this bill aside and say it's actually time to rewrite it, it's time to actually put some legislation that makes sense, that speaks to the problems, and actually acknowledges the realities of where we are as a country and as an industry in gaming. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Honourable MacPherson. Yes, Honourable Alberts.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just two questions. On page 26, the amendment relating to section 16, unlawful winnings will be forfeited. I would just like to know whether you have received legal advice, whether you can just take unlawful winnings without a court, going through a court process, and just by purely using an administrative process. Because I know that the Constitution protects possession and property as well, and that you can only be deprived by the intervention of a court, and not arbitrarily and not necessarily by way of administrative actions, but I stand to be corrected. So you can just provide some information on that. And then just generally, just to add to the confusion or complexity of the matter that we're dealing with, we must look at an online gambling as a global phenomena, and South Africa being part of that, the difficulty of policing that. And what's added to the complexity, or what adds to the complexity, is virtual money. So today you can buy bitcoins or whatever coins are out there. There are hundreds, perhaps thousands of versions at the moment out there, and you can use them to gamble. So once you've transformed your fiat money into virtual money, it goes into a virtual economy, if I can put it that way, which is borderless. So to police it is very difficult. I just want to make you aware of this, because you might have to liaise with Treasury in this regard, because as far as I understand, they are dealing with policies regarding virtual money and dealing with virtual money, doing transactions with virtual money, whether legal or illegal, and there needs to be formulated a position from government side that's holistic in nature regarding that aspect of online, that also touches upon online gambling. So I don't have an answer for you on how to deal with that as yet. I'm not an expert, but I just want to make you aware of these emerging trends, and that we need to be aware of this, because it adds to the complexity of the problem. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Albert. Honourable Williams.
Thank you, Chair. This isn't my second bite. I'm just continuing from my earlier questions. I'm going to talk about online gambling as well. I was wondering, is it not the best way to go is to legalize it, but then to massively tax those winnings? Because if you're going to be able to then confiscate these winnings, you must be able to identify that somebody's won something. So therefore, wouldn't it be in the best interest of the state to just tax them heavily? And I'd also like to just say that something that we haven't been talking about in this meeting thus far about this bill is we mustn't forget that gaming causes many massive socio-economic problems in South Africa, and we must always put this in the back of our mind, that although it's an opportunity for some individuals to make lots of money and we can tax people, etc., etc., but really, really, if you go to a casino late on a Friday night or something, you find a lot of very poor, desperate people trying to come out of their desperation by using the gambling system, and I don't think that this Parliament should ever forget that. Thank you.
Honourable Montash.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, my biggest worry is that it seems like we can't stop online gambling. It is out of our control. But my biggest worry about it is that it robs South Africans of the opportunities of employment. But I think we need to maybe agree with Honourable Williams in saying it must be heavily taxed. Chairperson, the other thing is, it's like the mother is at the baby's back, because we can't control provinces. At which point are we going to bite a bullet and take a decision to change the situation? Otherwise, we'll be talking center, left, and right all the time. Thanks, Chair.
Honourable Buyani, please.
Chair, thank you very much. Mine is just a clarity here, because I can see here the mandate of the National Gambling Board is responsible for oversight of the regulation and the gaming industry throughout South Africa. Then I wanted to check in terms of, because here they said there are loopholes, and also they raise a lot of challenges, one which is exploitation of the gambling industry, and also the transformation processes. I don't know whether they do have a plan in terms of how they want to transform the industry moving forward. And also in terms of the, because they want to enforce, do they have capacity? What is the challenge in terms of enforcing? I'm worried, Chairperson, if you will sit here and change legislation, because people don't want to attend meetings and say if a second meeting, then that's, I don't think that is proper. If someone does not attend the meeting, there must be consequences in terms of why I don't attend the meeting. Not change the legislation to suit someone that does not attend the meeting. So I think the process of developing the inspectorate to deal with the enforcement in terms of the regulate against the illegal gambling, that I think will assist as well. Also, I wanted to check in terms of the organogram, the structure. Do they have capacity in terms of people that are working there at the department as an industry? And also like to second maybe the proposal of changing the NGP to NGR. I think that one will be able to. Thank you, sir.
Honourable members, I said at the outset that it's two questions, comments, or 3 minutes. And that is exactly what we are doing. So I would like to refer to, there will be a second round. This is simply a briefing. I've avoided raising my own questions at this point. DDG, followed by the administrator. Thank you very much, Ms. Caroline Kangwani.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, honourable members, for the questions. With regards to the challenges and the mitigation factors, there is a reference where we mention challenges. Most of the challenges are addressed through the proposed amendments. So let me just give an example. Let me choose one that I can use. For example, on the issue of the self-regulated horse racing industry. When it comes to the self-regulated horse industry, we have a slide that talks to the regulation of the horse racing industry. So if you check in terms of what we are saying, for instance, where we talk about illegal gambling in South Africa, there's a slide where we talk about enforcement capacity. So just to clarify that we are not just listing the challenges, but we are also listing what are the proposals. So I thought instead of just coming up with clauses, one needs to just give a broad overview of what are the issues. And even, for instance, on the betting on lotteries, that's why we are saying that those who are currently engaging in this activity must be licensed by the National Lotteries Commission. So there is a link between the slide of the challenges and the proposals in the proposed amendments. And the question around the controlling of people and ensuring that people do not gamble, the slide that was referred to, it's about controlling, coming up with a measure around the hours of, it's about advertising and the soliciting of messages where, for instance, let me use an example. Children have access to the internet. They have access to modes of communication. I don't think it's parents would prefer that their children are exposed to messages, text messages that are advertising gambling. So we are trying to just control that and to avoid a situation where there's overstimulation in terms of gambling. So on this, we're not talking about online gambling generally. We're talking about some of the measures to control exposure to gambling. And in terms of the buildings, the way we see it as a department and the regulator is that if you take a typical mall, let's say you go to a mall and when you enter the mall, the first thing you see is a casino, and everyone goes there, young people, older people, our grandparents, our young children, they go in there. So, I mean, these are enticing things. So this is about protection. We just want to ensure that when you go to your mall, you don't come face to face to a casino and then suddenly you don't go there anymore and you go into that space. And
we have a challenge of people being exposed to gambling to a point where even pensioners, they take their pensions to go and gamble in the casinos. There are many challenges around this. So this is about ensuring that exposure is limited around gambling. And Honorable Kachalia, the inputs around other jurisdictions and online gambling, we note the comment. The other countries look at this area in a different light. Obviously, they have identified mechanisms to allow it from an economic point of view and other perspectives. So that is something that, and even the suggestions around the self-regulation and so on. But I guess from our perspective, this is an activity that is prohibited currently in the country. In terms of the our stance on online gambling and the inputs around the process that the department has taken to the difference between the bill that was published and the current bill now, and whether we will be gazetting another bill. Honorable McPherson, where we are now, we have introduced a bill into Parliament, and because now it's in Parliament, those are some of the decisions that the committee will have to take. But as far as we are concerned from the department, that process has been undertaken, and the changes that have occurred in the bill are informed by the input, some of the comments that came from the process. So after we receive comments, certain things are bound to be amended based on the review of some of the issues that have come through. And I would like to maybe indicate that some of the issues depend on the perspective of where you are coming from. We come from a perspective of government where we want to create a balance between the economic rationale and as well as the protection of our people. So when we restrict certain activities, we do so in the best interest of vulnerable people. So the balance is important. That's why even when we know the world is changing, there are trends that are developing, certain activities, you'll find that we don't approach them from a very aggressive perspective because of the different measures or things that we are trying to control. So, but I think in terms of the further consultations, it's something that the committee can guide going forward, because as we are where we stand as a department, there's no further public gazetting that we will be initiating at this stage. But I do know that the inputs that came through were considered from the different stakeholders. And in terms of the unlawful winnings approach, what we are saying is that we want to amend the legislation to allow us to not have that process of the courts. And I'm hearing you, Honorable Albert, about the legal opinion, whether we have done a legal opinion. But we are proposing that with this legislation, if it comes into law, that requirement we don't go in through the process of the court, because it's a very rigorous process, and sometimes the cost of going to court and the actual result of a particular case, the two of them are not aligned. And so it's something that, and also there's a process that the gambling board currently undertakes. There are investigations. It's not something that is taken lightly. They go through a process of verification, and before they get to a conclusion and before the processes of the court. So there's a process, and I think that it's something that if there is a gap can be looked at, but that's the approach that we are proposing at the moment. And in the consultative process of the bill, we have engaged with National Treasury around the FICA legislation, money laundering issues, and you are right, the world is changing and there are these developments that are coming up. I mean, Bitcoin is an in thing. 3 years, 5 years ago, we're not talking about Bitcoins. Maybe next time there'll be something else. And these loopholes, we must continuously be looking for ways or measures to control them. But there have been engagements with them around the gaps and what could be done to look at their looking at what they provide and how issues around online gambling gaps can be addressed. And I note the input of Honorable Williams around if we do legislate, the taxation could be used as a measure to get more out of that from this activity, because it is taking place. And also I'm noting another factor around the socioeconomic impact of this, because it's true, there is that element of that. In terms of the policy council, Honorable Mbuyane, the policy council is legislated. It's in the Gambling Act, and it prescribes how the meetings must be run. It prescribes the quorum. It prescribes the decision-making process. And it's a very important structure, because that's where the concurrency and the coordination is supposed to happen. And because of the meeting issue might sound tedious, but because of the impact it has on certain decisions, there is a need to amend the Act. It's legislated. So if it was an operational issue that was maybe not part of the legislation, it was going to be different. But we need to look at it, because it's a constraint from the law that needs to be addressed. And yes, there are the loopholes in the legislation that we are trying to address with the legislation, this amendment bill. The provinces and the national, there are certain things that are approached differently. And yes, also because the National Gambling Board, the powers versus the powers the provinces have, they differ. And I would also like to add that I think that the challenges that have been addressed through the bill and identified are actual challenges. But in every issue or activity, there are different perspectives to it, and it doesn't nullify what you have. Maybe we could look at what else is not here. But I would say these are valid concerns, and some of them have led to different cases in courts, and they remain major challenges overall. And I will hand over to Caroline to respond to other issues. Mr. Mashamaite, if you want to come in, you can also do so.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'll start with Honorable Williams' question in terms of the employment figures. The provinces provide us these figures, and they are basically audited figures from the provinces. What we haven't received from them is basically figures in terms of, or what we haven't requested from them is figures on indirect employment. So this is just direct employment. But from reports and research, even by other stakeholders, indirect employment goes up to approximately 70,000 jobs. So definitely this figure is just direct employment. We can explore trying to get more concise figures in terms of just an overall picture for direct and indirect. And then I'm just trying to see through what my colleague has already addressed. On the aspect of unlawful winnings, just to give the committee an idea, from the inception when we started confiscating winnings, and that is done purely based on banking legislation, and then banks, in terms of the Gambling Act, should hand over those winnings to ourselves. So when we've looked at basically the number of cases we have and the amount of money we've confiscated over the years, on average, the amount basically averages at about 20,000 Rand. I think this is for Honorable Albers. So when we look at the cost of going to court, on average senior counsel, you're looking at 50,000 Rand a day before we can even consider then all other time spent
for example, expenditure that National Gambling Board will spend investigating the matter, and then just the court matter. So we really find ourselves out of pocket. It's also one of the reasons why we had delays till the point we were able to raise our own revenue over and above the grant we received for the DTI. Then we actually started, you know, making sure we get these matters to court. Over a three-year period, we set aside 6 million rand. So far, we've been able to confiscate 1.3 million. So that's basically the reality of what we're dealing with. It's actually expensive, and it's taxpayers' money we're using in order to try and do these forfeitures. But we fully appreciate and understand the constitutional imperatives, and I hope my colleague, Mr. Mashamaite, will maybe enlighten us on perhaps if the statewide advisor has delved further into this aspect. So I was just trying to give the statistics there. In terms of Honorable Mantashe's comment, looking at, you know, what exactly is happening in terms of provinces and national government. We do acknowledge it is a challenge. We have various examples also, but we've not stopped at least trying to reinforce our mandate. We can use dog racing as an example, where we've, you know, clearly articulated in the gambling policy that dog racing should remain illegal. It's not a mode of gambling that is being supported for legalization. We've sent out directives using our authority to provinces to say we're not going to legalize dog racing. We've had a court challenge in that respect, and recently we had seen Northwest Provincial Legislature is currently considering amendments to the Northwest Gambling Act legalizing dog racing. So unfortunately, those are challenges that we are faced with. From one of the slides we presented, there are certain sectors in the gambling industry that have reached saturation, almost reached that saturation in terms of the maximum number of licenses permitted. For example, in casinos, if at the end of the day all the provinces roll out their licenses, and perhaps they could be a consideration, as you were saying, for the committee to consider as to, for example, if it's a casino industry, if nothing else can be licensed, then licensing authority can revert back to national government if at the end of the day provincial government has exhausted itself in terms of licensing. And then even around the EBT argument, we've done various analysis. We have no issue per se in terms of electronic bingo terminals. We're providing for it in terms of legislation, but what an observation that we had made from research is the fact that when you compare the electronic bingo terminal model to the limited payout machine model, the limited payout machines took about approximately 16 years to get to roll out about 12,000 machines. When you look at the electronic bingo terminals, it has taken 3 years to get to about 6,000. And all we are saying is at all times we always have to balance the socioeconomic effects versus the negative effects of gambling. So those who are pressed with collecting more tax, yes, we'll look at revenue that is derived, but we as national do have a responsibility to ensure that through the further rollout of gambling, we manage the negative effects. Honorable Mbuyane spoke about, or he asked a question about what exactly is the plan on what it is we want to enforce and transform in the industry and the capacity and the quorum. As we understand what we are trying to do, basically as a regulator, what we are also saying is it's well and good to have a regulator, but what is the best regulatory model? As a National Gambling Board, we've been doing regulatory work. We've had all the authorities to set norms and standards, but at the end of the day, if you can't manage conduct, that is a consequence or implications from those standards that you then set, you then find yourself not effective. Then we face the challenges that the department has set out, and it does look as though, yes, provincial government is getting ahead, and we are always chasing behind them. So in terms of what it is we want to enforce, it's being finally able to get a hold of the conduct, and conduct then it is what provinces do and also what the licensees do. Currently, in terms of the Act, we can only enforce if there is an invitation from a province to the National Gambling Board to say we've identified illegal activity, therefore we are requesting you to come along. We don't have that autonomy, basically, to enforce the standards that we set. We can only arbitrarily do enforcement if there's an inquiry relating to a particular provincial licensing authority. So that's also what is behind what the department is trying to do in terms of enforcement. From a transformation perspective, yes, there are issues. What we've done so far is our minister advised us to do a research in terms of transformation, and in that research, we're trying to get out really what are the levels of ownership, because BE levels are not telling us everything. So in terms of transformation, we're actually going further to understand from all the licensees, basically, what does it look like in terms of ownership in view also of the recent amendments to the BBBE code. From that research, we should be able to come up with a plan and a framework. So that's basically where we are in terms of transformation, because it's not the BE certificate doesn't always tell you what the bigger picture is. An interesting observation we've also seen is over time, and this we have tabled in our other reports, we've seen, for example, various sectors in the gambling industry buying into other sectors. For example, the casino industry has bought into the limited payout machine industry and the LPM industry. So we are also seeing dilution, and from transformation, that concerns us. We are not able to see exactly what is happening, so we are hoping that research will actually reveal more. In terms of the organogram, we are a very small organization as the National Gambling Board. We have a staff complement of 30 individuals. From the technical side, we've begun building capacity. We have one vacancy in the technical compliance division. We have three individuals. Those individuals are individuals who've worked extensive years in the gambling industry. Some of them have done, well, two of them actually have been involved in licensing of gambling software, online gambling products in their other work experience, also gambling games. So those are the kind of individuals we actually have from that perspective. They are also assisting the enforcement unit in identifying illegal online gambling if and when that happens. And then in terms of inspectors, we basically have four. So that's a total of eight individuals, but there's one vacancy. So that's basically where we are. But that is complementary to the greater staff complement in the provinces. I don't readily have the numbers in terms of how many inspectors we have at provincial level, but the staff complement we have, and then we also have, in terms of what the law requires us, we have the SAPS, you know, and other law enforcement agencies who are working with us, and then that's what comprises the team. So I think I'll stop there. Yeah.
Okay. Mine is just two comments based on the thing. Honorable Mashobo indicated the issue about controlling people's lives.
we do really want to guard against that, but our framework for regulating gambling in the country is premised on the principles that were recommended in the Vehan Commission, and one of them is that we should protect society from the overstimulation of gambling, and just to ensure that we don't have oversupply of gambling. And the latent defects of gambling is that people get addicted, they struggle financially, they end up not defaulting on their loans and everything, and that also gives the country a bad credit rating. That is the primacy why how we are approaching gambling regulation in the country. And as a result, we also need to ensure that there is revenue generation, the economy grows, and our historically disadvantaged people are also gaining access to that, and there's tax collection from gambling. So it requires the balancing act where we're trying to make the economy work, the industry function as well, but at the same time we cannot forget that people do get addicted from gambling, and hence our need to always constantly say our people need to be protected. The excluded people, once excluded, you should remove the name from the list. They should actually be excluded so that they are prevented from gambling for that period while they are getting assistance. This is exactly the reasons why we're trying to deal with it. And that is exactly one of the reasons why we have actually been considering the issue of online. We do understand that it is here, it's on our face, but we also need to know how do we deal with enforcement issues as well. Because once we regulate it, we still have a responsibility to protect our licensees from illegal operators, because they will not stop necessarily. And online gambling is one of the new things that I think even the police are struggling with cyber crimes to deal with. But this is one of the things that we need to deal with as well to ensure that. And the other reason from the Vehan principles is that we wouldn't just allow the plurality of gambling to go, like we just issue many licenses so we can gain revenue. We will be doing it so that at the same time, while we make revenue, our people are not actually considering gambling as just an everyday life. It's for entertainment and only for that purpose, not necessarily to go to employment and say I'm gambling as a job description. So we do want to consider those aspects as well, and that is exactly why we are now amending this to ensure that even the NGB participate directly on enforcement. As indicated just now, that we have to wait for provinces to say we are struggling, please come and assist us at national. But now we want it to work in that way. Then issue of the National Gambling Policy Council, we do want it to function very well, because we do have concurrent jurisdiction issues that we cannot run away from. And policy alignment is very important. That's why even our amendment now, we are recommending that we should have provinces also table their bills for consultation at that level, because recently they've been amending. The introduction of electronic bingo terminals were done through their amendments that were not consulted on at the National Gambling Policy Council. That's why one of the things that actually leads to lack of quorum, because they actually don't need have any obligation to attend it as well. But I think, yeah, that's all I needed to say. Thank you.
I think, members, we ought to get back to the principle of why we are here. At this moment, we are having a briefing on a piece of legislation that has just been tabled. It is a piece of legislation that goes back to 2009, as I recall, in the sense that we became aware then of the need to address gambling per se. In the interim, since then, we had a board which was removed, and a regulator and administrator brought in from trade and industry. Now, as a start, that is not a situation that can continue beyond so many years. It is required to be addressed. Hence, one could argue a technical amendment. That itself must be addressed. The second issue is that the Vehan Commission was followed, in fact, at our request in 2009, 2000 and, at the end of that year for a review of that. And that became the review of the gambling legislation, or whatever, of gambling, which included reviewing the recommendations of the Vian report, etc. The Vian report is before the 80s, I think 1978, 79, when is it? 1995. And there was a need. And this committee spent time as well going over that. The previous term, the same thing happened. Now, there is an approach that you can continue, as it were, exercising, flexing your legislative muscles until you are grey. You come in at 30, go grey, and you still review and review and review. Yes, that's possible. Or you can actually address something as effectively as you can, the critical issues. Now, much of this, I haven't had the opportunity to study this in the same manner as I think other members of the committee have, but what has become clear is much of this has to do with technicalities, what the committee asked to be addressed and hasn't been addressed. In particular, the issue around electronic bingo terminals, the definitions, etc., the bringing in the legislation into line with policy. These were issues that we requested. We also requested better and more effective enforcement, which wasn't possible, didn't seem to be in the current act. There was also, we were told, for several years running, that it was difficult to move because this is concurrent legislation. And therefore, the provinces, you are obliged to have some form of quorum there. And one way we know to actually collapse any structure, including Parliament, is not to have a quorum, so that you simply cannot move forward. And the committee then said, this has got to be addressed. Now, the issues I have referred to were not issues that one particular party felt strongly about, but that the committee as a whole asked for, and there were no objections. I haven't addressed some of the issues where the committee members had differences of opinion on. But the point I'm making today is that we are close on 10 years of trying to bring legislation here. And at the very least, we've got to look at ensuring that either we put a bill here that will ensure that whoever is running the gambling at a national level is now in line with statutory lines, the law itself. And we have got to address that. We don't have a choice in that regard. It's that or gambling will stop. Now, I'd be the first to say there's nothing wrong with that, but that would be irresponsible. Many people's lives depend on this industry. But one of the issues that we have never moved away from, and that is that gambling has to be regulated rather than stimulated. So there was a need to ensure that we just don't have a proliferation of gambling locations, that they are located in areas which don't undermine the social fabric of society. Now, these are the issues coming out of the policy, and when you look at what the bill says here in the, you know, sort of right at the beginning in the preamble, it does talk about repositioning the National Gambling Board as a national gambling regulator. It then says, which was, three reports have gone to this House and adopted, the need for the regulation of the horse racing industry and transformation. These are issues that we still need to address. The other one, which was a very difficult one, and I'm sure you'll all agree, is online gambling. There was no knee-jerk reaction there, because it was quite clear that this is a complex matter and not something that you can just put a phrase in that says no online gambling or remote. you have to look at whether or not you can enforce it in the first place. And secondly, how does it fit in with the architecture of legislation in this regard? So I do want to ask members, as you come back here to make a final comment, knowing that we will complete this before tea, I hope everyone is on board with that. I now open up again to the committee for final comment or question that will lead to a purpose. Honourable Kechalia, Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Matlobo.
Thank you, Chair. I must say I'm concerned that the DTI speaks, and I quote, to minimize and control loopholes, as opposed to maximizing tax revenue via effective licensing and regulation, including self-regulation, which will ensure a responsible industry that manages the negative effects. Surely that's what we should be doing rather than minimizing and controlling loopholes. That's like putting a finger in a dike's wall and hoping that the water that will plug the water from coming out. Now, secondly, this is an industry, according to PricewaterhouseCoopers, that by 2020 will be a 35 billion rand industry, a 6% compound interest growth on the 26 billion of 2015, according to what they looked at PricewaterhouseCoopers. Now, this is a big tax and employment opportunity and a reality that we need to understand and take into consideration. Thirdly, it's already been the chair alluded to it too, that in terms of dealing with provinces will block it where they can, and they have the capacity to do so. So you're fighting a losing battle there. And fourthly, in general, to talk about back to this minimizing and controlling loopholes, you know, one should take a lesson perhaps from one of the biggest exercises in trying to plug loopholes. If you think back to the Berlin Wall, that was one of the largest operations of this kind. And it wasn't broken by intercontinental ballistic missiles. It was broken by the bright lights of the internet, which is a lesson we should take into consideration in this particular regard. Now, it's lamentable that the remote gambling bill proposed by the DA in the past to legalize and regulate online gambling was rejected by this very committee, and that the DTI is still proceeding in much the way Eric Honecker and his wall did. I think we should relook at this and change. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Kechalia, Honourable MacPherson, followed by the Honourable Matlobo.
Thank you very much. DDG, I'd just like to get your, if they exist, on the different opinions that provinces have sent through to this bill. I suspect that there's an unhappiness amongst the provinces with this bill, so I'd just like you to tell me if you've received those views from them and what they are. I'd also like, Chair, for the last research and commission into gambling legislation to be made available to the committee. I think that is a useful document for everyone to read, so if that can be done. And then I would like the department, Ms. Masocha, to please draw up a comparison between the bill that was published in 2016 and the one that is before us as of today, and what has changed and why it's changed, because then it would be up to this committee to decide whether to republish it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable MacPherson, Honourable Maslobo.
No, thanks, Chair. Well, thanks for also that guidance about how far this matter is from. But it's going to be very important that we should also understand that some of the things those of us who happen to sit here or in various offices is not the condition in which our people find themselves in. I still come back to DG. This thing around key challenges, some of them, you might be addressing them in the proposed, what do you call it, proposed amendments. But they really don't put challenges without a plan. Let me make an example. You are saying there's a slow transformation in the industry. And when the presentation is being made, you showed the challenges of using the BE certificates and others. What is government doing? Because government has the instruments now to actually force the industry to do. Well, I know that certain sectors they've considered the charter, but others they've considered socio-economic development goals. And it's not here. We are saying there are problems around labor issues, transformation in the horse racing industry. The problem is now, where people are causing problems. I don't even want to talk about the horse racing, because the horse racing is also being exclusive. There is traditional horse racing happening in the Eastern Cape, in Free State, all over. That is actually being treated in the periphery. It's an immediate issue. And one of the things that we should appreciate, gambling has been there as a form of economic generation amongst communities. It's been happening over time. It takes different forms in various villages, in townships, wherever. And very important that with or without law, gambling will always be there. Therefore, there are certain views that, you know what, you want to regulate everything. You can want to regulate, but it will have capacity constraints. There are certain issues that are there. Let me make an example. To regulate an e-platform is the most difficult thing. It's the most difficult thing. People, they create these platforms. And I've traveled the world, and people are actually in the cyberspace. I was involved too. It's not an easy space to regulate. What did they put in there in that system? And it also needed the regulators to develop at the same time in terms of the capability and technology. Therefore, I'm thinking that some of these issues, the most important thing is about norms and standards. How do you actually use this thing to actually stimulate economic growth? But then there's a responsible gambling by both those who hold the licenses, but also those who are actually doing them. And then you find a mechanism to incentivize responsible gambling, but also punish. For an example, the issues Comrade Williams are talking about, the issues of consideration of taxes, because it's an industry that is there. Communities all over the world, the levels of gambling have increased. You know, when there is a socio-economic depression, as an example, people, they believe in all fallacies that this is a quick win. Gambling has increased. In South Africa, it's also even funny. If people go to, they believe that if they go to certain religious practices, they pay certain amounts like they do, and they are made to do other funny things that I will not say here on record, their fortunes will change. Let's not actually think that human behavior, and if you study the psychology of people, under certain socio-economic conditions, the material condition at the time, it varies from time to time. Therefore, when you look at your norms and standard, Comrade Chair, I think those ones we should be able to do that. But the most issue is to say we want responsible gambling. We want the government to be able to get some revenue and taxes back into the system. But at the very same time, you want to cap a lot of illegal gambling that has been happening over time. But those that others are referred to as illegal gambling, you want to formalize them. Because also formalization is very important. That you formalize them so that at least you know to what, how big is the industry and what are these challenges so that we avoid exploitations. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable McLaubel. Well, we have this bill in front of us now. It's been tabled. It's been referred to us. It is now in Parliament's hands. It is for us to take a decision on as to whether it is desirable or not to have this bill. Whatever our answer is, if it is a positive answer, we will then be able to hold our own public hearings here. This is a bill of concurrency. This is a rather, it's a concurrent piece of legislation. That means it'll also go to the provinces and get public, receive public hearing and comment there. So no, we don't depend per se on what the executive has had. It is valuable to have, but we go forward and hold our own submissions and use what the executive has as background information that would be valuable to us. So what I would like to do, honourable members, and we do have almost all members sitting here with us apart from two, and we've got apologies from the Honourable Esterhazen at another portfolio committee and the Honourable Slanguini in party work. We are asked at this moment in time to look towards the adoption of a motion of desirability relating to whether the principle of the bill and the need for the bill are accepted. Is there anything further, Mr. Herman? So now I will read, may I continue please? I will read the motion of desirability on the National Gambling Amendment Bill, B27-2018. That in the opinion of the committee, legislation is desirable to amend the National Gambling Act 2004 so as to amend and delete certain definitions, to transfer the regulation of bets on national lottery, foreign lottery, lottery results and sports pools to the National Lotteries Commission, to prohibit dog racing and bets on dog racing, to strengthen the regulation of casinos, limited payout machines and bingo, to provide for the procedure for the forfeiture of unlawful winnings to the National Gambling Regulator, to provide for the regulation of the horse racing industry, to provide for broad-based black economic empowerment in the gambling industry, to provide for the repositioning of the National Gambling Board as a national gambling regulator, to enhance the powers and duties of the gambling inspector, to provide for new offences, to provide for transitional arrangements, and to provide for matters connected therewith. Now that is the motion of desirability which would require someone from the committee to move. Are you moving? Let's do this properly. Objections will be added to. I am going down the laid down process. You will be given an opportunity. Can I please have
Chair, somebody? On a point of order.
No, I'm not taking it.
No, but
it.
You have to.
I do not.
But you do.
That's certainly don't, and I'm not wasting time. Can I have someone to move the motion of desirability? Honourable Khadebe, seconded by the Honourable Mantashe. Right,
Chair,
now,
please note that we will
are
be
there any objections?
Chair, please note that we will be escalating this to the Speaker.
I am asking you a question. Are there any objections?
There are objections. We object and we will be taking this to the Speaker for review.
Right. You've got the minutes of that, haven't you, Mr. Hermans? In the middle of passing legislation, we don't do that as you move. You have every opportunity to express your difference of opinion.
Chair, with respect, you put nothing in front of us, you read a motion, and then you expect us to agree to it. That is not correct process.
In time, we're going to adjourn for tea. But before we adjourn, please, I do want to hand over the chair after tea break to the Honourable Hadebe. What we're doing now is to invite further public comment and submissions. I've already referred to that on the substance of the bill, followed by the hearings and examination of such or other oral submissions if deemed necessary. I thank you. The meeting, we're now going to have tea break, and we will return after tea.
I'm coming back.
Put a reserve sign.
No. Having enough members
to start a meeting. We just need four, and then we've got more than four work rate, in fact. So we can start. We are going to get a presentation from the national regulator of compulsory specifications. You know, a presentation on their annual report plus their first rental quarter performance. This is part of the process of the PFMA. It's a very important tool which we are engaged with, which we must take very seriously, because it's how we look at how they expend the monies of the public. Because it is not your money. It is not my money. It is not the government's money. It's the people's money we are speaking about. So we have to give account what is happening, and then the members must do their oversight. So I don't know who's leading the team. All right, I think we've got the chief executive, Mama Dise, yeah. And then the CEO will introduce his entourage, and then so that we can start with the meeting.
Thank you, Acting Chair. Good morning, honorable members. The team with me today is the chief financial officer, Mrs. Mimi Abdul, Edward Matemba, Manager Strategy and Risk, Macy Kett, General Manager for Food and Associated Industry, and Mr. Donovan Cicero, Manager Chemicals and Materials and Mechanicals Division. Chair, we are mindful of the cost containment measures. The other two, they are resident here in Cape Town. The only three traveling is myself, the CFO, and the manager, Risk. Straight to the presentation, I'll start with the annual report presentation. I will zoom to slide 8, the highlights. We have, during the year, remove non-compliant products from the market to the value of 300 million. Over the 10 years, the NRCS has been able to remove non-compliant products to the value of 2.1 million billion. The reason why we want to highlight this is because, Chair, it is our 10th anniversary since our formation. So we will be having a convocation where we just reflect upon the 10 years that we have been in existence. In addition, on our food division, we were able to remove to inspect 12,530 fishery consignments were exported. The vacancy rate has been reduced from 12 to 6%. Although we have still received a qualified audit opinion for the fourth year in consecutive, we have made a significant progress in trying to address the audit qualification. We have set up a project team which is driving the move towards a clean audit. And through the work of this committee, we have been able to increase compliance from 52% to 81% in the current financial year. That's a significant improvement from where we were last financial year. So if I may just explain the audit qualification briefly, Chair, it relates to completeness of revenue and the cutoff. The completeness, the AG is simply saying that we are not able to account for all companies that are supposed to be paying us our levies. So we have approximately 6,000 companies that we know of that we regulate. Out of those, 81% of those companies have complied in this current financial year through the project team chasing the companies that have not been compliant. Only, as we speak, only 1,010 companies are outstanding. Those are the companies that we are still trying to chase. Some of them move premises. So we are still trying to locate these companies to ensure that they comply with levy declaration. The second part of the qualification relates to cut-off. The AG is saying that we are not accounting for the levies in the right period. So that is informed by our legislative regulations, which provides for four periods of levy declaration and two periods of levy payments. So the last period of payment, the 3 months fall into the next financial year. That's the challenge that we are trying to deal with. In addition to all, the project team has driven a process of registering all the companies in our system. So all non-companies have been registered on our system except 148 companies that we still want to register. Straight to performance now, reporting on strategic goal one, we have, which is to develop and maintain and administer compulsory specification. We have developed five technical regulations that include one regulation for import conditions on fishery products and canned meat. And the other four were amendments of compulsory specification in the mainly in the motor automotive industry, circuit breakers, motorcycles, and one in the food industry, canned meat products, and also one in the chemicals, materials, and mechanicals division, and improving and waterproofing in buildings, a polymer film. The overall, the performance is on this area is 62.5%. The variance was mainly contributed to the failure to agree with stakeholders on some of our VCs. The process of developing a VC is similar to a legislative process. There is a consultation process. We have to reach a consensus before we submit to the minister. In some of these VCs, the consultations are prolonged because of inability to reach consensus with the industry. In terms of the National Building Regulations and Building Standard Act, there have not been any review board cases, mainly because of the Constitutional Court pronouncement which declared this part of this legislation unconstitutional. So we were not able to hear the cases. But the judgment has given us a brief in that it allow us to finalize all the pending cases by December 2019. We are undertaking that process now to ensure that we finalize by the deadline. In terms of the strategic goal to maximize compliance with compulsory specifications and technical regulations, that's the enforcement activities that the regulator undertakes to ensure that there is market surveillance of the regulated industry. We have conducted a total of 50,965 inspections during the financial year. In terms of the industry, 21,446 of the inspections were conducted by automotive, electronical, and CMM, as well as the legal metrology divisions. These represent 13% overachievement. I've spoken about the project to ensure compliance of the by the companies with our levy. So the big chunk of those inspections were as a result of that project to chase non-compliant companies. So hence we have the variance of 13%. in the food have conducted 29,519 inspections on fishery and canned meat products. In terms of our approvals, we in this area, this is an area that we have been battling for a long time, and I think we are gaining traction in terms of improvement in that area. We have managed to improve performance from 53% from last financial year to 81% in the current financial year in terms of approvals within 120 days. In the gaming approvals, the gambling board has left the mist on this aspect. In terms of the our gaming approvals, we have managed 77% of approvals within 30 days. The difference between general approvals and the gaming approvals is that the period are different. This is a shorter period of turnaround time of 30 days. In terms of just the breakdown of the inspection per sector, that slide will just show you that food contribute much chunk of that, and the next slide just showed in terms of the percentages as well. The next slide shows the non-compliances that have been identified, division as well. Legal metrology is leading the queue there. And in terms of monetary input of the inspections, fresh fish, chilled and frozen fish, that's the area where we find much of the non-compliance in terms of monetary value. The second, this slide will just indicate the samples. When we conduct inspections in legal metrology, we sample products. This is just to highlight the number of samples taken and the rate of non-compliances. This slide also is just to emphasize the points that I've already spoken to. I will just skip this slide. In terms of strategic goal 3, to inform and educate our stakeholders, we have conducted 20 consumer awareness campaigns out of the in the country, which is, I'm not sure the percentage in terms of variance, Edward. I will come back to that. It's overachievement in terms of performance. I've spoken about the vacancy rate, which is 6% against a target of 6%. As part of encouraging self-compliance, we have concluded an MOU with ShopRite Checkers. This is a pilot project aimed at ensuring that the industries voluntarily comply with our regulations. So ShopRite has committed that they will only deal with compliant products across all their shops. And should we identify non-compliance, they will immediately act to correct those non-compliance identified. And with that, Chair, I would want to ask the CFO to take over and present the financial performance.
Thank you, CEO. Thank you, Chair and colleagues. I'll go through the 2017-2018 financial year report, which is our annual report that was delivered to Parliament by the 24th of August. we look at the numbers and we see the increases from 2017-2018 financial year, and we can see that we've increased the revenue by 77 million rands year on year from 17 to 18. Of that, the CEO advised that we went on a project to address the audit qualifications specifically, and our average for the last 5 years on the audit qualification was a success declaration rate of about 50%. We've increased that to 2017-18 financial year to 81%. So there's been a huge increase of about a third of the percent to bring us up to that revenue of 430 million at the end of the financial year, contributed to the internal processes working within the NRCS with all the business units, GMs, inspectors. We set up a committee to address that and put a drive in place to get customers registered on our database and get them to declare their levy returns. That brought us a revenue of 40 million rands over and above the normal business processes, which was the processes in the last 4 years that we followed. So that 40 million then increased our revenue to 431 million at the end of 2018. And if you look at the expenses, they're pretty much in line with prior year. Employment cost was increased by about 8%. We had a slight decrease in other expenses of 6%, which left us with a total increase year on year of about 20 million rands. That left us with a surplus of 84.5 million rands at the end of the financial year. Of that, I've mentioned earlier, that contributed to that surplus, a huge increase from 32 to 81 is the 40 million rand revenue that was the special project to address the audit qualification. Okay. Any questions, any queries on the financials, the summary? Good. Okay.
Apologies.
I take full responsibility. Thank you. Okay, the breakdown of the revenue. The summary of the expenses and the revenue is on the bar chart, which shows us the revenue of 431 for 2018, 346 for expenditure, which leaves us with 84.5 million rand surplus at the end of the financial year. It's a summary of what I've said before. The revenue breakdown is as follows. Levies was 214 million rands at the end of 18 from 2017, which was 198 million rands. The grants also went up by about 50%. Prior year was 86. We received 128, which was in line with Treasury's approval to allow us the grants of the increase of about 40 million. Services also went up slightly by 15 million, and that's due to the request from industry for testing and sampling by the NRCS. That leaves us with a 431 million rand revenue at the end of financial year. Thank you. The expenses, as I've already indicated, 280 million was the employee cost, which translates to about 81% of the total cost of the NRCS. 20% is the other cost, which is overheads and fixed costs like rental, telephone, travel, etc., brings us to 346 million rand at the end of the financial year. And this is speaking specifically to the revenue qualification, and as the CEO has indicated, there's two qualifications. One is the cutoff, which is a 3 months that needs to be recognized in one financial year, and the other 3 months in the new financial year. So because we are not recognizing the revenue accurately in the correct financial year, it continues to be a qualification. However, part of the project to address the qualification, which we started in January 2018, is to recognize the 3 years in the correct financial year. So if we don't receive the declaration from customers, we're going to estimate, which we allow to, by the Act, allows us to estimate. So we are on that drive as well. So we want to be fully compliant by the end of March 2019, given the other dependencies as well, and trying to automate our systems, because all that we've done is manual.
all the work we've done to address the qualification thus far has been manual. Okay, and the other qualification is the completeness, whereby we ensure that each and every customer that's registered on the NRCS database declares a revenue a declaration to the NRCS. We're working with the GMs, we're working with the inspectors to ensure that when they do site visits to customers, that they do request the declarations be submitted, and that is a project that we're busy with as well. Again, it's a manual system, and we're hoping to get that automated in the future. The chairperson of the audit qualification committee is with me. I'm not sure if you'd like to add anything to what I've said on the qualifications. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you, CEO.
Not really, Chair. Let me just take you through the plan to address the audit qualification again. This is what we have done in the current financial year and some of the plans that we have put in place going forward. We are engaging National Treasury in terms of mechanism to estimate, and we want to align all our VCs and so that they have a LOA validity period. Some of our LOAs are indefinite. For instance, a cement LOA, once you have it for life. So it's one of the contributors in terms of misalignment with other business units. I think part of the critical part in addressing the qualification is the NRCS modernization project. I think I must take the committee into confidence that on the last occasion I reported that we will be appointing a service provider by the date of June. And unfortunately, that did not happen. Part of the reason that we were not able to appoint was that after the process was run and a recommendation was made, I picked up that the recommended bidder is a company that is owned by a former ICT steering committee member who has just ended the term in March 2018, and he has been with us through the path, working with us, advising us on this project. So I pick up the issues of conflict of interest, and I didn't want to proceed on that basis to jeopardize the integrity of the process. So I advise that the committee should do due diligence, and finally the recommendation was that we need to re-advertise the project. So I think that's the main reason for the delay in the modernization project. However, having said that, we have went back to the drawing board to see how we can best manage this project and ensure that it expedited. I would be appointing a general manager, one of the general managers, to be a project manager, to mainly focus purely on this project. And one of the other interventions is to get weekly reports just to monitor the progress that is being made in terms of implementation of this project. Then in terms of the audit matrix, we in the last financial year we had 36 I think audit findings. We completed 22. The 14 is still work in progress. That those are mainly the findings in the ICT environment.
which we will be addressing in the current financial year. In comparison to the current financial year, we have 44 audit findings from the AG. So far, we have already completed 9, and 85 are still work in progress. A big chunk of that, again, is in the ICT environment, which is a message that cut across that we need to really do something about our systems and ensure improvement. Thank you, Chair.
All right, we've just finished the report. I don't know whether we could have taken the first quarter or you don't want to. Honourable and William.
Chairperson, I think we should be allowed to ask questions now on the report we've just received and then go on to the next one.
All right, the floor is open. Honourable Mashobo, Honourable Williams, Honourable Albert.
I suppose we should be able to commend the institution. They've done well. They've done well to maintain issues of unqualified audit opinion. And the actual performance is very high, above 90%. Safe to say that comparatively, when I know that it's a high summarized report. When it comes to issues of audit, I think the matters you could see they are increasing. In the previous financial year, we are talking about the issue that we've been raised. There were 36, now there are 44. Probably we want to share why this particular increase. Number two, and we must congratulate you that you did fortunately manage to pick up the conflict of interest and you acted responsible. The only difficulty that probably one you might have to explain, what is the existing capability of knowing what you want and how does it look like? Especially in the light that the person who was advising is gone. You know, when it comes to problems of ICT, the biggest problem that sometimes you actually buying a bouquet or you go for solution that actually you don't even know and have an imagination how it looks like, whether it's okay or not okay. And then ultimately you end up actually getting these licenses. You know, they provide a lot of other solutions. Year one, they give you this. Year two, they come and tell you these things. The systems improvement will do what, and they take chances. And I'm happy that you see some of your work in the information systems is dependent on other agencies. Probably just engage much so that at least you can finalize whatever kind of an agreement or MOU or whatever, so that you can have an access to the information. Because some of the information, you might not actually have to go for a Rolls Royce, but probably you need to go for a TAS in terms of the system. But generally, that's what I would say. In the financials, we are using the word income. I don't know whether it's a budget or the actual budget looks like. There is always an under expenditure, which we call it. They call under expenditure surplus, which is an under expenditure. And the under expenditure is a sign. Normally, sometimes we don't correlate financial and non-financial information in terms of performance. But I wanted to check whether that money, do you actually have it as retained earnings? If it is retained earnings, Comrade Chair, it will help in terms of sorting the ICT, the modernization process, because just the hardware and the technology you might want to do is not coming cheap. Or whether those surpluses, which to me is under expenditure, does it go back to where? But I want to support their report. and that there's a plan for improvement in terms of the audit remedial action plan.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you for the input. I just want to talk on the Auditor General's report that's inside of your annual report. And I just want to know what are you doing about these, because you put some, when you explained to us, you talked in very much as if they were technical problems, but the Auditor General said deficiencies in the internal control environment. They also said leadership did not exercise adequate oversight in instances regarding financial reporting. And they further went on to say that management did not adequately monitor and review compliance with law and regulations. So I want to know, what are you doing about those shortfalls, not just the technical ones that you were talking about? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the presentation. I'd just like to ask two questions relating to two different matters of investigation on your side or that you're dealing with. Can you give me the status update of the Gauteng Ethol instruments, whether there is a certification process underway, what the status of that is at the moment? And then secondly, I recall that you also were involved in an investigation with regard to the Cougar fires that broke out. And I would just like to know if that matter has been laid to rest and whether there's any reports from your side with regards to that. Thanks very much.
Chairperson, during the oversight period in 2017, the committee picked up that there was over expenditure on human resources. What measures have they undertaken during this financial year to reduce this expenditure? Because, Chairperson, we had picked up this, that there are the people that are paid above their job grades. What have they done? Also, what are the recommendations that were given to the NRCS by the AG? How have they implemented those? Is there a plan of action in place for addressing the findings? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Chair. I think Honorable Mantash has dealt with my issues, but I wanted to check in terms of the critical posts that are there and advertised, or because seemingly in terms of the gaming approval, there's an increase there. And also welcome the report in terms of the modernization. To say they are about to, in September, which is September this month, they will also advertise for another second time in terms of the computer system. But I think I'll also check, man, if there's no other programming in terms of the computer, as the Honorable Mashab has indicated. Just go for a small one, then you'll upgrade the system while you have it. So if there's any, yeah, and also the last one, in terms of the LOA, I hear they say they've dealt with the issue in terms of turnaround time of 30 days that is uploadable. Yeah, I think the revenue qualification, Chair, if I can get clarity in terms of the task team, where are they, and also the NT and DTI, in terms of the consulting firm to assist. Thanks.
I think the honourable members have answered their questions. On my side, I just have only one. It will be the issue of the turnaround time when I'm going to do this event. When determine the imports when they come, because I was in the European Parliament early this year, they raised sharply that you guys take long when they put samples to you to check. It takes long. Actually, some of them took more than 6 months, others more than a year. So what is the turnaround time when we are dealing with this issue of specifications in particular, so that they can bring their products into our market?
Thank you, Chair, thank you, honourable members, for all the comments and the questions. Let me start chronologically. Honourable Masogo, the increase in the audit findings can only be contributed to the extent of the audit. By that I mean, in the previous year, the AG has been auditing us themselves. This year they have outsourced the audit to Ernst & Young. And we found that the extent of the audit, some of the issues that were acceptable before, they are no longer acceptable now. So we had all those engagements with the AG. Hence we have this different outcome. It appears to be painting a picture, but for us I think it is only because of the extent. It was quite an intensive audit that we've been through this financial year. In terms of the existing capacity to drive the project of modernization, I think we have the support of the highly qualified ICT steering committee that we have recently appointed. I think they are on their fifth or sixth month now. And we have also a very high-level ARC committee that is keeping us on toes in terms of how we should be moving with the project. In addition to that, we have a Gartner, which is an ICT advisory company, internationally acclaimed, that is assisting us in terms of providing technical advice on how we should move with the project. Indeed, on the comment on collaboration with other government departments, I think that is critical, and always the challenge for us has been the legacy systems that we are still operating on. For instance, we've been running a project with SARS to utilize the risk engine and align the HS codes so that we can best do our job. But the challenge has always been our inability to keep up with ICT technology. So I think that matter will be resolved once we have a proper technology in place. The issue of under expenditure and where does the surplus go? I think, firstly, as we have indicated, the much of the surplus comes from our project in resolving the revenue qualification, where we were chasing non-compliant and companies and making sure that they pay the levies that are due to us. But the challenge, of course, is that the country is facing fiscal constraint and Treasury is looking for money. We have to find ourselves in a position where we need to justify why we should retain those surpluses. And that process is underway. I think I also forgot to mention one important aspect, is that much of the surplus is also because the money was reserved for modernization project, which is being delayed. So we trying to engage National Treasury to make sure that at least they allow us to retain some of the money to implement critical projects. Honourable Williams, that's the point, that we had a huge debate with the AG. What do they mean by saying that? The explanation from the AG is that by us not failing to account for the levies and not able to account for the levies in the correct period, to them it is management and leadership failing to put internal control in place. I think that's the language that they generally use in their reports. It doesn't suggest any inadequacy in terms of our abilities to do that, to do the job. We have a competent team, and as we have tried to explain, that the audit qualification is a technical kind of a qualification. And I believe even SARS, if they can be audited the same way we are being audited, they will never pass. Mm. But that's not to say that we have to be complacent and say, no, there's nothing that we can do. We are trying to manage the qualification. Hence, we have engaged the National Treasury. We are engaging the audit standard board. I don't know what they call them. That those processes are underway, and we have appointed a team of auditors, specialists, I think Deloitte, to assist us also from a technical point of view in absorbing the qualifications. Honorable Albert, the Gauteng e-toll, I think the process is still underway from legal metrology to verify the e-tolls. So it hasn't been completed. As you know, it's a new environment. We have given them interim, we have agreed on interim measures to manage the e-toll, but the final verification process is still underway. In terms of the Fort Kuha, we were working with the NCC. So the NCC has done an investigation, and they haven't issued a final report. We're waiting to get the sense of their final report before we can determine the way forward in terms of the Fort Kuha. We didn't want to duplicate government efforts in addressing the matter. While the NCC is running the investigation, ours was to provide them with technical support where they lack, and we await the final report from them. Honorable Mandash, the human resources. The NRCS is currently doing an organizational review process where we're trying to align our processes and our human resource capacity to our mandate. We hope that that process will address some of the challenges that you have raised in terms of our human resource. But I must just caution that the wage bill is also informed by the nature of the work that we do. Our core work is market surveillance. In order to do market surveillance, you need resources. The resources are people who will have national coverage in terms of going and doing the necessary inspections. The recommendations by AEG, yes, we've been working with the AEG in terms of how we can resolve this qualification. And in their report, they also acknowledge the fact that the organization has is in the right direction in terms of resolving the qualification. So their estimation is that with the way we are going, we can be able to resolve it in 2 years. I don't know how that estimation is arrived at. But for us, we want to move out of the qualification this current financial year.
Honorable Mbuyane, the critical positions, yes, we are filling the critical position. The CIO position, we are having interviews, I think, on the 25th of September. We are in the process of appointing a chief operating officer. We are at the stage of making an offer. We have conducted the interviews. It's just a matter of making the offer to the recommended candidates. Chair, you made a comment on the turnaround in terms of inputs. The process is that before you can import, you have to apply for a letter of authority. In terms of our turnaround times, is 120 days. What we have found in the market is that most people who have those challenges, they import and then apply the LOA. So when we stop the product at the borders, because our inspectors are available at the borders to do inspections at the source as part of our strategy. So when we find those products having been imported into country without a letter of authority, it's then that a person wants to apply. Obviously, the delay in terms of that consignment, the customers are waiting, the storage cost, and all that. So those are the challenges. I think the message from the NRCS has been to encourage the industry to comply with our legislation and ensure that you apply for letter of authority before you can import. I thank you.
Honourable members, I think Honourable Mantash.
Chair, I'm not sure if there's no contradiction here. Maybe I must not term it like that, but my biggest concern is whether NRCS is only concerned with registered companies for their inspection, whereas there's a lot of unregistered ones that our people have access to. Some is expired goods. There's a lot of unregistered. What about those? What is their plan in trying to assist our community?
Thank you. Part of our project is firstly, when we remember market surveillance is market surveillance. You don't only conduct inspections on companies that you know. You blindly go into the market and whenever you find companies that are not registered, we immediately register them. We ensure that they are registered. And secondly, on the issue of the current issue of spare shop, spare system, we are working with the NCC in ensuring that we conduct rates. We have already done one rate in Pretoria, and I think it's an ongoing project that we will be working in collaboration with the other regulators, including the NCCs, to address it. Because the challenge is mainly because most of these products, we don't regulate as such. Our mandate is limited by compulsory specifications. What is in compulsory specifications is what we regulate. But the way the government is trying to attack this is for the agencies to complement each other. Hence, we have all these agencies, NCC and other regulators participating, so that where the one legislation is lacking, the other legislation kicks in. So in other words, if we visit premises where there are such goods, we can use any of the legislation that will give us much leverage.
Can I have the last question?
All right.
The reason for the exorbitant salaries in
The reason for exorbitant salaries in the NCR, the CEO says it's because they hire high caliber people. But what does Deloitte want in their agency if that's the case?
Was giving advice around the issues of the Auditor General's opinions and how they can turn around that. I think it was around that. But you cannot answer for you. You can answer for yourself.
If I understand the Honorable Mandash, the issue of Deloitte, we spoke to it in the context of the audit qualification. But if you want to talk to it in relation to our salaries, yes, we use Perlminis system, which is licensed by Deloitte, which create our jobs. So our remuneration is informed by that grading. I'm not sure what was going to be the question.
All right, I think the question which is still outstanding from Honorable Mandash is that there are people who are earning above the grade in which they are. What did you do about that? They say they are in a particular grade, but they're earning above that grade. I think that's what they discovered in their oversight. CFO must answer that one.
But yes, Chair, but we said in our response that we are doing the organizational review. So that's the process that will assist us with some of these challenges. And historically, you must put it into context that some of these the reason why we have the current compensation budget, it was through challenges that NRCS went through in the past. I think the DTI can best explain it because there was an intervention from the DTI and hence there were conclusions on some of these matters.
The group says all around. From DTI in particular. Assuming you gave them a mandate to go overboard.
Sometimes people
thanks, Jefferson. I'm not sure if I can answer that out of the blue. There were some, I think it's 2014, 2015, there were some unrest at NRCS. And I think the settlement that was arrived at by management then is what caused the salaries to be higher. So the current CEO was not there. So, but it's not the DTI that settled for salary increments in the its agencies. It's management and the agencies that have to negotiate and come to some agreement. And management then made some decisions that it turned out perhaps they were not optimal. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to ask a quick question and then a follow-up one on that, depending on the answer. Just for clarification, that the turnaround time for LOA is currently sitting at what?
120 days.
Now, thank you. As I understand it, the turnaround time for LOAs in 2014 was 120 days. 2018 now, the turnaround time is still 120 days. That effectively means that anyone who applies to import goods, particularly in a technological area and so on, is 6 months behind the curve as a result of that delay. And there has been no change since 2014 to 2018. Your turnaround time is still 120 days. That is, if I'm not mistaken, one of the major focuses of the organization. Forgive me, but that is a shocking statistic.
Right. Yeah, we can respond to that, but you must differentiate between working days and the ordinary calendar days. What is it you are dealing with?
I think it's calendar days, Chair. We're talking about calendar days, 120 days. I think I take cognizance of the point made by Honorable Kachali. Part of us employing the risk-based approach is precisely to address some of the operational efficiencies. So once it is fully implemented, we can then look at how we can best improve on our performance. I think it's something that whenever we go, wherever we go, even at NEDLAC, we are having similar discussions on how we can come to a reduction of that period.
The last one, before we go to the next one, because yeah. I think we're running behind schedule.
Thank you, Chair. So in terms of the LOA delay being 120 days, whether it's calendar or working days, the same in 2014 as it is now, by comparison, what was the increase in salaries between 2014 and 2018?
The salaries increase were informed by collective agreement, Chair. And I think for the current last financial year, it was 6%.
I think that with our labor laws, there's a bargaining process which takes place, which does not deal with the issue of performance of the people. Once the employee is there, we go through that process. But I think that what I hear too is that, because I'm also in this committee, is that the CEO has been recently appointed. For how long? Since March this year. So we'll expect more next year, because we have known the challenges. We expect more next year. All right, thanks a lot for the issue of the IR. Of the AR. Can you go to the first quarter land of financials and non-financials report?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah, in terms of our first quarter, the highlights, we have managed to remove non-compliant products to the value of 125 million. And the products include slide 8. They include the electrical appliances and fishery products. We have maintained the vacancy rate at 6%. We have exceeded a target on development of compulsory specifications. We have submitted 5 compulsory specifications to the DTI against a target of 2. In terms of inspections, again, we have exceeded the target. We have conducted 12,746 inspections in the quarter. I'm not going to go to the detail in terms of the business units' contribution to the target. In terms of the approvals, we have slightly regressed there, 68%, mainly due to the fact that the first quarter is always a period of holidays in April and so forth. People are still on leave and holidays, but we hope to pick up on that by the next quarter. In terms of the gaming approvals, we have increased to 82%. That's the breakdown in terms of the industry and products. I'll skip that. In relation to the strategic goal 4, we have approved NRCS ICT strategy, which was one of the findings in the last financial year. So we have addressed that aspect. We have an approved ICT strategy. We have an approved stakeholder engagement plan, which was also a finding in the last financial year. The consumer awareness campaigns, we are lacking in terms of the target. We conducted 2 consumer awareness against a target of 3. I've already spoken to the organizational review to revitalize the organization and improve processes. That project is underway. We hope to complete it by the end of January 2019. CFO financial performance.
Thank you, CEO. Okay, Chair and members, I'll take you through the Q1 report, which is April to June of 2018 for this current financial year. The numbers read as follows. We had the transfer from the DTI of 77 million, and levies was 43 million, and that relates to prior year because we had to cut off at a certain time to prepare for the annual report for 2018, but we continue to receive the declarations and report them in this financial year. We make the adjustment at the end of the financial year because the levy period, the forms were only due back to the NRCS in July, which means we weren't able to report on that in this period. We reported on it in Q2. Services, which is the services for LOAs, etc., registration fees, all sits in there, and we exceeded that by about 2.5 million. That brought us to a surplus of 45 million over the budget for the financial year, but like I said, 44 million of that belongs to the prior year, which we'll adjust in the next at the end of this financial year. So essentially, the levy income will only start to flow in July, and then we recognize that correctly in this financial year. With regards to the expenditure, we had 70 million against a budget of 78, and that was essentially due to the vacancies and terminations at the NRCS. So we have underspent or have a positive variance of 8.5 million. The other expenses, we have a positive variance of 6.5 million, and that relates to travel, testing, sampling, consultancy fees. It's early in the year, so I think it will smooth itself out as we get into Q2, Q3, and towards the end of the financial year. Against a budget of a surplus budget of 478, we have 61 million, and I've taken the members and chair through the revenue, which has exceeded the budget, which is 45 belonging to prior year. So that leaves us with a surplus of 61 million. I heard a member asking about what do we do with the retained earnings, and that retained earnings that has accumulated, and we've had over the years accumulated at the end of March 286 million rand of surpluses, which we have applied to Treasury to retain, and as the CEO has advised, 30 to 40% of that will be expended when we procure the modernization. So we've ring-fenced that. We've written to Treasury to motivate as to why we should retain the 286 million. That's the bulk of it. The other part of it sits in facilities. So we're waiting the outcome. We've had engagements with Treasury with regards to up to the end of March as to whether they will approve, and we've heard that we're in a technical recession. Minister of Finance said there's going to be a shortfall in taxes, so I think they're going to be looking to for surpluses to be returned to the fiscus. The current year surpluses we'll retain until we complete the financial year end of March 2019, and then we'll have to motivate as to why if we need to retain it. But we will be using the surpluses in this current financial year to deliver on our demand plan, which is about 60 million rands. So we'll use the operational surpluses to fund the procurement demand plan for 2018-2019 financial year. Thank you.
Thank you, CFO. I think that the issues which were raised by the Auditor General are still there. We have to expect another qualification again. Because if you say that this levy will be already gone to the first quarter, which was supposed to be in the first quarter, in the last quarter of the previous year. So it means that this issue of turnaround is very important. It must be attended to. Honourable members, I think as the first quarter results, which are very short,
to me, it's the question of financials, Comrade Chair. Progress is seen. There is something around financials. I don't understand why will the transfer from DTI, your budget a certain amount, and then there's a 69% increase, and you don't refer why the spike. But that's what I'm just checking. The reason why I check these issues, the budget must always be as a tool that must assist in terms of achieving performance results. That's the only issue I see. Thanks.
All right, any other questions? If there's none, there's no problem. CEO?
Thank you. The reason is that we request our grants in quarterly phases, so there's two quarterly sitting here. We requested it earlier than we should have. Our cutoff date is the 20th of the month, so we requested it earlier and DTI transferred it earlier. So there's two quarters sitting in there. The budgeting is correct. It's for one quarter, but the actual grant that was transferred is two quarters. So it's almost a little bit of a prepayment.
All right. Think it is your lucky day, CEO and CFO. These members are preparing for the debate in the afternoon. That's why they are unsettled. So that's why they are so conservative today with the questions. All right. But we really appreciate your attempts in trying to smooth up the operations of the regulator. And then I think that when we come back again, we'll have better spending expenditure, better pattern of the spending expenditure in particular. Because the plan means that some work is not being done. I'm very afraid of that. It means that some work is not being done if there's a surplus in the expenditure. All right. Any parting shot before?
Future. No comments. Thank you for the members' participation.
All right, members, thanks a lot for your availability and your participation throughout. The meeting is now adjourned. Good luck for your speeches in the afternoon. Sure.